Welcome to Between Two Ovaries, your go-to for all things women's health.
A lot of people just say like, oh, my vagina.
Yeah.
And yes. That's all of the above.
That's not your vagina.
No.
Well, it is.
We're here to cut through the confusion, bust some myths, and give you the facts straight from the experts.
You cannot still believe the amount of people that come to a gynecology clinic saying that they don't look right down there and they need something doing about it.
We're keeping it real, bringing you honest conversations about topics that matter to you.
Everything goes back to the menstrual cycle.
Yes. It's a low-risk procedure, but it's not a no-risk procedure.
From periods to menopause and everything in between, we've got you covered.
So whether you're here to learn, laugh, or just listen, you are in the right place.
As soon as I said it.
So, welcome to our episode on chronic pelvic pain. Chronic pelvic pain, we felt, deserved an episode of its own because we know that there are so many people suffering with it. We've discussed before that chronic pelvic pain can have different conditions related to it, but today we wanted to focus on all the different causes of chronic pelvic pain, basically. We know it's a massive unmet need. People kind of say, oh, you can go to this clinic or that clinic, but a lot of times they actually just don't exist. So we wanted to discuss more about it and make sure that people are advocating for themselves and know what to look out for so they can get the right treatments.
Okay, I feel like it's in the name, but how do you, like, definitely define chronic pelvic pain? How do you know if that's what you've got?
So basically it's intermittent or constant pain that's felt in your pelvis, which is the area below your tummy. And it has to be there for 6 months, but there are some kind of exclusions. So if it's purely related to your periods or if it's cyclical, then it wouldn't be classed as chronic pelvic pain. And also if it's related to pregnancy or intercourse specifically. But if it's outside of any of those descriptions, then it would be known as chronic pelvic pain. And there's quite an important distinction. So you can have chronic pelvic pain as a symptom. So you are experiencing pain in your pelvis that's been there for more than 6 months due to a condition.
Okay, so it could be like a secondary thing.
Well, it's a symptom of a condition.
Okay.
Which we'll talk about.
Okay.
But then you can also have chronic pelvic pain syndrome, which is where you have that symptom, but we don't know exactly why you have it. And it's what we call kind of a diagnosis of exclusion, which you might have heard of with other things like, for example, irritable bowel syndrome is a diagnosis of exclusion because you don't always have like a
Basically, you've made sure it's nothing bad in a sense that we need to cut out and give you a specific treatment for.
Okay. Yeah.
And you've kind of decided that we need to manage it. Mm-hmm. And we're not saying that it's not there. We're saying that you've 100% got this.
You've got
this,
it. We just don't know
but
exactly
we need
why.
To, yeah, okay. We don't know why. So therefore, we're going to call it chronic pain, pelvic pain syndrome, and give you treatments, hopefully, that can help you for that.
Okay.
Which is really important because I think a lot of people feel dismissed or have done in the past and still do when they go with a symptom that's causing a severe effect on their life and the doctor or whoever says, we don't know what it is, see ya. It's important that we don't just say that. We recognise that you have pain and we know that that is caused by something. We just don't know exactly what that cause is, but it doesn't mean we're just going to send you on your way. We're still going to try and help you.
What happens is people just bounce from speciality to speciality. So gynae's had a look and they're like, nope, we can't find a cause, therefore it must be gastro. So gastro, see ya, and they're like, no, we can't find anything. And people get kind of lost in the system.
Must
and
be
feel
really dislike heart, man.
Yeah. And you just feel like you're not being listened to, I would imagine.
Yeah. And having to tell the same story every single time. Yeah. It's got to be annoying.
Painful.
Yeah.
And how common is
actual painful?
How common? So it's quite common, isn't it? It's just as
really common
as things like migraine, chronic back pain.
Yeah.
So it's affecting a lot of people. I think it's quite hard to know exactly like a number because a lot of people will have it, but not necessarily present to the doctor
but said
and have
that,
a diagnosis.
In between 1 in 7 to 1 in 4 women. 1 in 4 is usually kind of in the reproductive lifespan. But that's a lot of people
that's
walking
one of us,
around.
Like,
a lot of people walking around.
I think people find it hard as well to distinguish between, oh, this is probably normal, and actually this is an issue.
Yeah.
Because what you're saying is you're normal, isn't that?
Yeah.
A lot of women expect to be in pain. Just as part of being a woman, they might not actually go and expect any help with it. So there's probably people walking around with chronic pelvic pain that haven't really thought that it's a problem and just get on with it, which is really sad.
I think there's a lot of people who think as well, I'm not ill enough or I'm not in pain enough to go and justify doing something about it.
But I would hope that after people have listened to this and also like everything else that we've done, that if you're worried about something, you're your best person to know if there is something going wrong, going on, make sure you go and see someone about it.
So I feel like it's potentially a bit of a silly question because it sounds like this could have a massive impact on daily life. But what sort of, what is the range? What's the spectrum? I'm assuming there's one.
So huge burden. Mm-hmm. Some people will end up with like days off work, or when they go to work, they're not as effective as they should be potentially when they're at work. And so it was estimated that it could cost like the UK population 11 billion. Like, wow. That is a lot of money, isn't it?
So like, not just personal burden.
No.
Like
so
burden.
Economic burden, but personal burden is even more more kind of definitive, because you're talking about relationships breaking down, unable to kind of do your daily living activities, so like picking your children up or kind of having sex, being able to go and get your shopping.
Daily activities.
I wasn't
going to
say it.
Well, because
some people maybe.
Because I started with picking your children up, I was like, what if you've not got children?
If you've not got kids, you must be
probably having sex every day if you've not got kids.
I was like, my mind was kind of going to, but what if you want children? And if you can't have sex, then you can't have children.
She's
like,
trying to be inclusive.
I like it.
I'm
like
going all the way around.
Doing your food shop.
Doing your food shop.
Also, like socialising with friends. Yeah. Just going about, every day, going out for a few drinks.
Yeah.
Every day. Well, we're all in different phases of our lives. Drinking every day. But that does highlight that the fact it can affect every aspect of your life, can't it? So depending on what your lifestyle is, having chronic pelvic pain will affect it, because you might not be able to go out, you might not be able to work, you might not be able to have a relationship with someone because it's painful when you have sex and they don't understand what's going on and you feel like a burden.
Trying to explain to people all the time, you know, you just said about like you're telling your history to different medical professions. Well, what if you had to tell like your friends all the time why you can't go to things? What if you're trying to tell your partner why you can't be intimate, or your partner why you can't do anything?
So yeah, sometimes I think it's important for people. They think it's nice to have that label to kind of give an explanation to people of why you can't do something.
I think it's made a lot more difficult when you don't have a label, in a sense. And we can say lots and lots of times over and over again that actually treating the symptoms and make sure you're living your best life is the main issue. But for when you're cancelling on friends, cancelling on work, not able to do things, being I'm cancelling because of X, I think probably does make it more straightforward.
Otherwise your work is probably sat there being like, pain again, you're pulling a sickie, or like even your friends will be thinking that, won't they?
Which is rubbish, isn't it? Because I just feel like
it's not fair.
We're highlighting how people will feel unlistened to.
You shouldn't need to, but it feels like it's needed.
Like you shouldn't need to be justified. Like if you've got pain, you've got it.
No, but for some reason, and I think it is more common in women, you're maybe not believed as much, or if you don't have that underlying definitive, this is the cause of your pain, you aren't really given the same benefits as someone who's just broken their leg
but
and has a clear cause for
Let's
the pain.
Take a step back, okay? So if you said you'd got back pain, I'd be like, oh gosh, that'd be awful. How's your movement? Are you managing to get around? Are you managing to have sex, Alison?
The first thing you ask, I hope.
Obviously.
But realistically, like, if you had back pain...
Yeah.
That's not a. That's
it's,
not got a medical
diagnosis,
but there's no stigma to it at all.
No.
If you've got a migraine, that's a headache.
That's horrendous. Yeah.
Everyone understands headache.
But everybody understands it. Everybody gets it. There's no. You know, you said about ringing work. If you rang work and said you've got back pain, they'd be like, "Oh, okay, take it easy."
I think it would feel awkward. Like, I know it shouldn't, but it would feel awkward to call into work and say, "Oh, I've got pelvic pain."
Yeah.
I feel like it would feel.
But
it's
also highlighted
say,
by
shouldn't.
Like this is just as common as migraine and chronic back pain, but people don't talk about it as much. You don't hear like, oh, the student's not coming today because she's got chronic pelvic pain. That never is never
no
a conversation.
No,
but it
no.
might be like, oh, she's got a migraine, which is really common.
It's funny,
but just
it's
that,
just the issue. It should be private.
Yeah.
As soon as we start talking about that, I was just like, but we would say that if someone had back pain, we'd be like, yeah, that's fine. Like,
Have a cough, you're all right.
But it also fits into, you know, we've done a few episodes on things like endometriosis, adenomyosis, causes of heavy bleeding as well as chronic pain. And we've talked in those episodes about how not just does it affect your own personal life in the ways we've talked about, but women are 51% of the population and they make a massive contribution to society through work, through caring responsibilities. And if you've got chronic pelvic pain, you can't contribute to society in the same way that you would if you didn't. And so it's really important to try and help people get back on their feet and able to contribute again, because that will make their mental health better and it'll also improve like society as a whole in any way. So it's really there's everyone's lots of responsibility. Evidence
that if women are working well in a sense in society and they feel like wanted, cared for, loved for, then society works much better. Yeah. Because if you think like about the 51% of the population, like you shouldn't be unseen, unheard. You should be kind of at the forefront of making sure that you are feeling well.
No, definitely.
What are the differences between acute and chronic pain?
Good question. So acute pain is usually due to kind of an injury or a specific problem at that time.
Okay.
So you have got acute pain because you've pulled a muscle.
Like a direct relationship.
Or you've got acute pain because you've got an ovarian torsion. So your ovary is twisted on itself. It's caused acute pain in your pelvic region. You've gone to hospital because you're like, it's very uncomfortable.
Not cute.
Not cute.
But it's like a sudden, maybe not sudden onset, but short onset thing, like having a headache or having anything that Nick just described, rather than it going on for a long time.
Okay,
you can usually see the end point.
Yeah, damage, and we can kind of do something about and it
damage
gets better.
And recover. Yeah,
but a lot of times, I suppose moving on from this, is that you can have an acute pain and you can be treated for that acute pain and then it can turn into a chronic pain.
Okay.
Because nerves can be injured, things can be changed, a fallopian tube needs to be removed because you've got a ruptured ectopic pregnancy, and then you can develop a chronic pain after that. So you've had an acute pain, which has been like the starting point, and then you've developed a chronic pain after that.
So that's why, like, some people with chronic pelvic pain might have an underlying cause. It might be something that happened, like potentially they had surgery for something, and then that surgery led to lots of scar tissue. And then as a result of having the scar tissue, they go on to get chronic pelvic pain, which is there for a very long time. So, but not always, obviously, as we'll explain, there's, we often don't know the cause of chronic pelvic pain. But when you have like an acute trigger or like an acute injury that then goes on to cause like persistent stimuli of the nerves, that can affect how your nerves receive pain. So if you have something there that the peripheral nerves are constantly being told is painful, that can make them more sensitive to just normal day-to-day triggers as well. So you can get pain from something that shouldn't cause pain. And then also like your central nervous system, so your brain and your spinal cord, if it's constantly again being told that there's pain somewhere, then that can have like another change on how it's functioning, and you can perceive pain there when it's not supposed to be there as well.
Which that means
the nerves are complicated.
I got very neuroscience-y. Yeah.
But then it means again, it's something that you can't see.
Yeah.
So we can't look and be like, oh, your nerves look damaged from that, like thing that you had, like
that thing 6 months ago.
And that initial thing might have gone. You know, you then like that initial trigger is healed, but for some reason your nerves are still acting as though there's pain there. You know, there's nothing to see there anymore.
So there are like treatments to help with those symptoms, but you're never going to be able to say that's the issue. That's what's causing it. Which I think is the frustrating.
It's not like
thing,
the nerves are flashing red.
No problem.
That would be good.
I like that. Okay, so we've said sometimes you don't know the cause.
Yeah.
What causes do we know?
Yeah, we do know loads of causes.
Good.
So, and sometimes there can be more than one cause. So there's a lot of causes that can run intermittently, like together with each other, basically. Yeah. So a lot of people, and we've discussed this before, can have endometriosis, but they can also have adenomyosis, and they can also have migraine and IBS. Mm. And there's a lot of times that these conditions can be interlinked, or they'll all play a part on each other. And I think it depends, like, what part of your cycle you're in and what treatments you're on, that one bit might trigger another bit, might trigger another bit.
So just do a quick reminder of what endometriosis and adenomyosis are.
Definitely.
Yeah. Well, so endometriosis, so the endometrium is the lining of the womb on the inside, and endometriosis is when you get the lining of the womb outside of the womb. So it can be anywhere in the body, but most commonly it's on the ovaries, on the fallopian tubes, in your pelvis, but it can be in your bladder, in your bowel, it can be anywhere, and that can cause inflammation and scar tissues and lots of pain. And then we'll do adenomyosis.
So endometriosis, lining of the womb outside, and then adenomyosis is lining of the womb in the muscle of the womb. So instead of being outside of that womb, it's just kind of in the muscle. So that can cause a lot of pelvic pain and also really heavy bleeding as well. A lot of times these are kind of deemed like sisters. They have like
didn't we call them evil twins?
Yeah. Evil cousins.
They often exist together, but you can have just one without the other.
Yeah, you can have them separately. Yeah. say.
Sisters, not twins, that's what we said.
Like the eyebrows.
Like your eyebrows, yeah.
And we have got an episode on endometriosis, and we have one on adenomyosis.
And those kind of conditions are ones that we can see endometriosis if we do a diagnostic laparoscopy, and adenomyosis we can often pick up on scans. So there's something that it's a cause of chronic pelvic pain, but a lot of times we can see that cause of chronic pelvic pain, which then goes back to that whole being and feeling justified. And I think that's why a lot of people that come through want to try and find an answer.
Yeah. Okay.
The really important point, I think, as well, is that with chronic pelvic pain, although we will try and find a cause, if you've got pain, you have an ultrasound scan, and then we see adenomyosis, it's really important to think that it might not just be that. And it quite commonly isn't just that.
Yeah.
Or it might not just be endometriosis. And the reason I'm bringing that up is because often surgical treatment for endometriosis is wanted by patients. Mm-hmm. And it's a really important counselling point to make sure you understand that although there is endometriosis and that might be a cause of your pain, removing it or treating it might not actually improve your pain.
Okay. Because as we go back to that whole...
It
could be something else, but we've gone back to that as well. You know, the nerves... being
the surgery
altered,
damage, yeah.
Not even damaged, like they've been altered because they've got an acute issue. So whether we remove the acute or chronic issue, you may still have that flashing beep 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 nerves altered. That even if we go back and say, well, you've got no endometriosis anymore, that's not to say that you're not going to have pain.
Endometriosis and adenomyosis, two potential causes, but there are many others as well. So adhesions is a word you might hear. A lot of people will wonder if adhesions are causing their pain. Basically, adhesions are kind of scar tissue in your abdomen, pelvis.
So things sticking to each other. So adhesion means that it's stuck to each other. Like you have an adhesive that either sticks
like
in.
Glue. I was like, I've heard this before.
So like, you know, you get some adhesives that will stick anything to anything. Some adhesives that say they will and definitely don't. Well, adhesions are things sticking to things inside. And we usually call it kind of a filmy adhesion, whereby it's very, like a bit cling film.
Okay.
And so if you kind of touched it, pulled it, moved it, it would come away. So it's filmy, like really filmy, would come away. Or a thick adhesion, although cling film doesn't go away.
I'm thinking like cobwebs, but that's not the right kind of thing.
Well.
But you know, like...
I don't know how to.
Yeah. You know what I mean? You can like go through
you
it.
You can pick goo up with other goo.
Like filmy, just very like light. They're not. Yeah. They're very easy to break apart without much effort. They just can fall away when you touch them.
And then sometimes you have really thick adhesions that have got their own vascular supply, so they've got their own blood supply.
Okay.
So you can't just like move them away because they will be bleeding everywhere.
Yeah.
So if you're going to take adhesions out of that down, then you would need to kind of make sure that you've secured them first so that they're not going to bleed everywhere and then take those
like super glue and PBA
pretty much
so adhesions are a bit controversial because if you have if anyone does a laparoscopy on you, puts a camera into your tummy, blows it up with gas, most people actually have what we call congenital adhesions, so a little bit of your bowel might be stuck with a filmy adhesion to the side of your abdomen wall.
But you were born with it.
That's normal.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah. But then other people might, for some reason, have more dense adhesions. So common causes are if you've had pelvic infection before, then there's inflammation and that can form adhesions. Mm-hmm. Things can stick together. Or if you've had surgery before, again, that can form adhesions. So then it could cause your bowel and your uterus to stick together. C-sections are common ones.
Yep.
Often women will have had a C-section and then their bladder might be stuck to the front of their womb. And adhesions don't always cause pain, but they can cause pain because if you think about your tummy, all your organs inside, they want to be able to move around. Like your bowel blows up with gas, digests food, everything should be able to move around and slip around next to each other. But if you've got scar tissue stopping things from moving around as they should, that can cause pain.
Okay.
So in some situations, you might break down those dense adhesions, but it's really, again, difficult to know if that will improve your pain or not.
Yeah.
And even by doing it, you can cause more adhesions.
Yeah.
So it's not perfect.
Everything is still going to repair. And if you've now got two raw edges, the raw edges are going to go somewhere. Mm-hmm. So it's like whether they're going to go back together or whether they're going to attach to something else or...
But then if there is, you know, if really clearly there's like lots of dense adhesions between your ovary and your bowel and you've got lots of pain in that area, then
hopefully that
it
would
makes
help.
Sense to try and improve that. Yeah.
Or on movement, some people can get pain that because they feel like stuck. So if you're saying like your bladder is stuck to the front, to stuck to your womb, and people can feel quite like hemmed in a little bit. Yeah. So releasing those, you would be able to kind of stretch out. You would hopefully feel better after that. Interestingly, there is another, and this is just a total side point, but if you have had chlamydia, you would often have adhesions in your lower tummy, so in your pelvis. So there's usually a lot of scar tissue around the fallopian tubes if you've had an untreated chlamydia, but you also get violin string adhesions up by your
liver.
Yeah, so that's how they look. So if you have a laparoscopy and you look up under your liver, you see these violin string kind of appearance adhesions. So they look like, you know, thin little lines. Silvery kind of lines.
As soon as you look up and look at that, you're like,
you
oh,
can see
textbook.
That. Yeah. It's called Fitzhugh Curtis syndrome, which is obviously three people who must have been like, I'm naming it after me.
I like violin string.
Yeah. But it's, yeah, associated with chlamydia and gonorrhea, isn't it?
Yeah. So you can get all sorts of different adhesions, and there are pros and cons to taking them down. I wouldn't specifically do an operation just to look for adhesions, but if you were having an operation for something else, then you would always kind of take any adhesions down that you thought would be annoying for the person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Basically.
And then, so pelvic congestion syndrome, have you ever heard of that?
Heard of it,
Congestion
to me is up here.
Yeah. So it's another controversial, well, more controversial than adhesion. So we don't know if pelvic congestion syndrome actually is a syndrome, if it actually causes pain. It's something that people describe. It's like, so if you think about varicose veins in your legs, you know, you can see them. You've got these like dilated, bulging, bunch of grapes kind of like vessels in your legs that
you can
see.
The ones that like really blue.
Yeah. Okay. And they're painful often. Yeah. You get like an achy, uncomfortable pain, and you can have them treated. Mm-hmm. If you have a pelvic ultrasound scan, the person who's scanning you might see that the veins in your pelvis look quite dilated.
Oh,
obviously it's on the inside.
Okay, got you.
So they might write in the report.
Like my
nose. They might write in the report like, look suspicious for pelvic congestion syndrome. Mm. But what we don't know about the veins in your pelvis really is, actually, is it normal for them to dilate at certain points in your cycle?
Oh, yeah.
So if you have an ultrasound scan every day for a month, which would be mad, do we see that they dilate at certain points in your cycle and then they're normal again later on, maybe? And does actually the dilation of your pelvic veins cause pain? We don't know yet.
Yeah.
So it's a bit tricky. It might be something that is mentioned, but and it could be a cause of chronic pelvic pain. It's just that we don't know for definite yet.
So it's like a query, question
mark. Yeah.
Another one. And there's some crazy treatments that people have had for that. I've seen various different research papers about kind of thrombosing veins in the pelvis, and you're kind of like, oh, but you won't want clots anywhere else, and you don't want to like cut off the blood supply to anything. And like, I feel like there's a lot of stuff with regards to that and crazy treatments and researchness. But I think a lot more needs to be done before we kind of say that this is what it is and this is how it's treated. We definitely don't have that.
Not yet.
And in our guidance, like our gynecology guidance, we definitely don't have treatment options for this. Another one is interstitial cystitis. Have you heard about this?
Yes, but I don't really know why.
I've heard of cystitis, but the first word you said.
Yeah.
So is it like comes up with UTI vibes?
Yeah.
I think that's where I've heard it then.
Yeah. So it's like pain in the bladder. So it's also known as bladder pain syndrome.
Okay.
And it's really quite common. A lot of people can have this and they can kind of put it down to pelvic pain. And actually, at the end point of having all of the investigations and different things, and when someone takes a really good history and discusses through this properly, you can have a cystoscopy, which is a camera inside your bladder. So we've discussed before about hysteroscopy, camera inside your womb, and a laparoscopy, a camera inside your pelvis, but a cystoscopy is a camera inside your bladder.
They all sound very similar.
Yeah, there's a lot of oscopies. You'd have a look and you're looking for signs of interstitial cystitis. So this can be really kind of debilitating for people, actually, because they can find that they need the toilet all the time, and they've got loads of pain in the bladder, like the lower pelvis. They get treated for multiple urine infections, but actually on the urine dips, when we do the urine in, the tips to check for a urine infection. They've never actually got an infection, but the symptoms seem related to a urine infection. And the treatment for this is kind of multifaceted. So there's a lot of different things, different layers, depends who you see to what you would get. Obviously, first line to pain relief, but it can get a lot more invasive with regards to what you can do with a cystoscopy. When you're doing that camera inside the bladder, sometimes people have stretches of the bladder. Sometimes people have Botox, into the bladder.
Yeah. Kind of relaxes the muscle.
So, okay, makes sense. Yeah. It does actually have a point. It's not aesthetic.
Yeah, no, it's not just for the face. It's also for the bladder.
Be able to see a difference.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of times it's because the nerve fibers are like, bah, 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 and just firing all the time.
Flashing red again.
Yeah, flashing red. It's back to these nerves again. Yeah. And causing pain, causing uncomfortable. So it's kind of a relaxing them.
Okay. Telling them to chill.
Yeah, telling them to chill. But obviously it's the same as Botox anywhere else, so you don't just have like one off. You need it every kind of few months because it wears off.
How do they do that?
With the cystoscopy, we can inject in the bladder.
I was going to say, I don't know how you would reach it.
I was thinking like massive needle.
Yeah, really long, tiny needle.
And you've got to be really careful because obviously you don't want to relax the whole bladder because you want to be able to...
You still want some control.
Yeah. You need to know. So sometimes you would need to be able to know how to catheterize yourself because a complication could be that you wouldn't be able to wee.
That's like the tube that goes in.
Yeah. Okay. Just you're making your bladder relax with these Botox injections and then it's relaxed so much it can't contract to help you have a wee. You can go into like retention.
The way you said relax, I thought you meant like in the way that you just couldn't control it and you would just
wee. It's usually the opposite.
The opposite, usually.
That you don't know that you need to have a wee.
Got it.
So yeah, normally your bladder fills and when it gets to a certain like volume, the nerves will be like, oh no, you need a wee. Go to the toilet. But if you've relaxed.
I really didn't jump because I was like, well, surely your bladder would say, Alison, you need
Mine calls me Eleanor, I don't know about that. But then if you've relaxed those the muscle too much and you're not getting those signals, then you can sit there with a really, really full bladder and not know you need to go, and that can be damaging.
Which can cause more issues.
Well, really damaging, because your bladder can stretch then beyond capacity and then it's just a big floppy bag that doesn't work.
We don't want that. No. So if that's happening, you know, and if you are realising you've not gone for a wee for a very long time, you might need to use a little tube called a catheter to just put that into your bladder, drain it, and then move on with your life.
Yeah.
Schedule every 3 hours, go to the toilet.
Yeah. there is also, we'll put a link to Bladder Pain Syndrome Support Network, because it's, again, a really, I think, like, embedded within a difficult condition is another difficult condition, isn't it? So we don't know exactly why it happens, and it can cause lots of a negative effect on your life. So there's, good information that we'll share at the bottom of this episode as well.
I love that. More causes?
We're getting there. We're nearly there now. Irritable bowel syndrome, which I think a lot of people will have heard of. But I still think that people think irritable bowel syndrome, they're just like, oh, you just get an upset tummy now and again. I don't think it's that it causes pain.
I think you just think of diarrhea.
Yeah, it can be debilitating. I think people are just like, oh, so you
just
didn't...
Just IBS.
Yeah, you didn't have inflammatory bowel disease. You've not got ulcerative colitis.
Yeah.
You've not actually got anything going on. You've probably just eaten the wrong foods and you've got IBS.
But it can be really, really debilitating, like you said. And it often goes hand in hand with things like endometriosis and adenomyosis. And we've done an episode on nutrition for IBS related symptoms with endometriosis, which is really good, actually. I learned a lot.
We did learn a lot.
Eat the river.
Yes. But again, it's a diagnosis of exclusion, so it's, you know, you've had tests to check that your bowel symptoms aren't caused by something else. But it is clear that you have bowel symptoms and you might be then told you have irritable bowel syndrome.
I think it's a word that's used like too much now, you know, when people are like, oh, it's just my anxiety, I'm just so anxious, that's right. And you're just like, well, you're not. And for people that are anxious, I think that you're just actually taking that away from them. I think people use the word too much. They're just like, oh, it's just my IBS flaring up, and I'm like, well, no,
you've actually just eaten something dodgy,
you've just eaten something random, or you've drunk too much, or you've... That's not IBS. IBS is an actual condition that you would...
It can be really
like severe, monitor on a day-to-day basis. I think a lot of this, actually, we've not mentioned, is that you need to just monitor monitor your symptoms, because it makes it much easier to think about what the diagnosis might be if you monitor actually what
like
your symptoms
diary.
Are.
Yeah.
Pain diary, definitely worth keeping if you think you've got
and
this.
I'm always a fan of a paper diary, you know.
You can put notes on your phone. Also, so musculoskeletal factors are a massive part of chronic pelvic pain.
Yeah.
So obviously your pelvis is not just a bony pelvis. You've got loads of muscles in there and ligaments. And people can have various different causes of pelvic pain that come from the muscles and the ligaments.
Okay.
So it can be from common things, like if you've had a baby before, if you've had an episiotomy, or, you know, if you've had a C-section.
What?
Oh, sorry. it's a... So when you're... Episiotomy. So you will know what this is. If when you're having a vaginal delivery, if it looks like you're going to have a bad tear, or in some countries it's a routine thing, you might
Or if you're having an instrumental, so if you're having a forceps or a ventouse...
Okay.
Then you always through the vagina to the side, which makes the outlet bigger for the baby to come through, which then gets repaired.
Okay. Well, you'll know what this is. I'm like, no, I don't.
Oh my god.
No, I don't. I've never heard of that.
So like a controlled cut to stop an uncontrolled cut.
That is,
That was a very good explanation. Oh,
thank
well
you.
Done to that.
Because you want a controlled cut to the side to try and there's evidence that says both ways on this, and we're not going to go into it, but to try and prevent a cut that goes straight down into your bottom.
Yeah. Which would give you worse sort of long-term problems.
Well,
can
give
you worse.
The bacteria.
No,
No, it's not just that. Your bottom, you've got two sphincters there. So if you go, if you have a tear that goes straight through there, then we can repair them. But we're never going to repair it as well as it was before it was repaired.
Yeah,
childbirth is terrifying.
Yeah, it is.
There's definitely no perfect way of having a baby.
Yeah, but you don't necessarily have, you won't necessarily have one of those. It's just, it is a part of vaginal birth for some women. And having had an injury to your perineum and your pelvic floor can give you chronic pain afterwards.
Okay.
So not for everyone, but it can cause pain. But equally, you can have like musculoskeletal causes of your pelvic pain without having had any kind of like injury or surgery.
Just like you can from back pain.
Yeah.
Like you can wake up with
just
back pain. You could wake up with symphysis pubis dysfunction because it's like the front. The front of your pelvis is joined together.
Okay.
But not by a bone, by a ligament.
Oh, okay.
So, like, that can be sore. That can be sore in pregnancy. It can be sore just after pregnancy. So there are things that can go wrong, just like your back, just like your ankle, just like your, you know.
It's just another body part.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But it's quite a complex, you know, your arm is quite straightforward. You know, you've got you've got bones.
Sure. Imagine
you're
saying that to an arm, like an orthopedic surgeon. And they're like,
don't worry about it.
Alison's like, I'll fix you up, don't you stress.
But your pelvis is like a basin, you know, you've got like layers
I'm
of muscles.
I'm just thinking about her being like, oh, don't worry, I'll repair that for you.
Oh, yeah, no problem, come in.
You've only got a couple of like tendons and stuff.
I mean, actually, your hand is really complicated. Your upper arm, super simple. I'll fix it for you. But your pelvis is more complex, and we might not be able to know exactly like which muscle and what the effect of that muscle is having on the pain that you're having. But pelvic physios are really, really good at diagnosing and, you know, helping to give you exercises to improve that kind of thing as well.
Okay.
And you can also have Botox injections.
Yes, into your pelvic floor.
Yeah.
Oh.
If it's like over-firing.
Over-flashing
again. So there's lots of different treatments, but it's kind of nailing it down to like what we think could be the problem to start off with. I think the other thing is, and we can't like gloss over, is the psychological and social issues, and there is like a big interlinking thing with psychological and social issues with regards to chronic pelvic pain, and there is a massive crossover with people that have chronic pelvic pain, and they also have depression, they also have sleep disorders, and they're really common in women with chronic pelvic pain, and it's a bit chicken and egg. Like, what came first? Yeah. Are you depressed and you can't sleep because you've got chronic pelvic pain, or have you been depressed and then you've developed chronic pelvic pain? And there's
Is it making it feel worse?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a bit of a cycle, I think, as well. Yeah.
I think it's really difficult to get to the bottom of that kind of stuff, but we can't gloss over that. And we know, we've done research before that's shown that the levels of depression in people, in women that have got chronic pelvic pain, are much higher than your general population.
Yeah.
So it's that holistic approach and making sure that you're speaking to people and not just focusing on one tiny thing. Like, have we discussed everything when we've spoken to someone?
Yeah. And there is also a bigger, so there's a lot of women who have chronic pelvic pain will have previously experienced sexual trauma, sexual abuse, that kind of thing. It doesn't mean that you have experienced that if you've got chronic pelvic pain, but there is more of an association with it as well.
Yeah.
So that's another element of us, we might ask you about that if we suspect that is something that's happened.
Yeah.
And that can have a massive impact on your, well, obviously your life, but also like sex going forwards and pain perception and that kind of thing can also come from previous traumatic situations. And thankfully, there's a lot of work that can be done to make that better as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's an important part to not forget about
it's,
that.
It's things that we can help with, because actually, if you have chronic pelvic pain because of a lot of underlying issues that maybe we can help with, then we're not going to go down the line of investigation on investigation on investigation that actually is just going to re-traumatise you or cause like PTSD or cause like, you know, like we don't want to do that.
And stress.
So it's kind of like having the time to ensure that we're listening to people and making sure that we're going down the correct lines, basically.
So if someone comes in and they're like, right, I've got this pain, it's lasted quite a long time, what is causing it? And they came to you, what would you do?
So I guess the person might present, probably would most commonly present first to their GP. And we talked about pain diary before. That's like the best thing you can do to help advocate for yourself. Because it is hard to explain a chronic pain to someone else in like an 8-minute consultation. So if you are experiencing pain and you write a pain diary, that can be really useful. So noting down like what the pain feels like, what it's like at different parts of your cycle, if you have a cycle, and anything that makes it worse, anything that makes it better. It might be food, it might be certain activities.
Certain pain relief.
I
suppose it's not like when you can take a picture of a rash to send to the doctor, there's nothing to take a picture of.
But that can be really useful. And I would say do that, because if you go to your GP, they might then say, come back in 3 months with a pain diary.
So if you take one, you're prepared.
You're prepared,
Like, forget about that. I got it here.
Fast forward, here we go.
And also think about other things like your bladder and your bowels as well, because you'll be asked about that. So does the pain, is it linked with when you go for a wee, when you open your bowels, or is it completely separate? So that's one thing you can do to help advocate for yourself.
Yes. And then I think you need to be aware that the medic that sees you will want to examine you. It's all right, you're saying that you've got this pain, but we want to have a look and see, is there an actual tender spot that is related to this pain? Can we find anything on examination? Is there anything obvious? Is there actually a physical abnormality that is to do with a cyst in the bottom of your vulva, or kind of a lump because you've had a cesarean section and you've had a bit that's not healed? Like, we want to have a look. So usually they'll have a feel of your tummy first and make sure that's kind of okay, and then ask you to undress from the waist down, do a speculum examination, just as like if you were having a smear. So they would ask you to kind of be as comfortable as possible, be as relaxed as possible. We totally get that that's easier said than done. And if you're finding it uncomfortable, or if you don't want to go ahead with that examination, you're well within your rights to say that. They would use a speculum to have a look at your cervix, make sure that they can't see any abnormalities from that, and then they would usually do a vaginal examination as well. So remove the speculum, and you would use like your fingers, like a digital examination, and then press on the tummy as well. So we're looking, does your womb feel enlarged? Can we feel like an ovarian cyst? Can we feel any masses? And also, is there any tethering? Does it feel like your womb moves? Because it should. It's not like it's not stuck, cemented in. It should be able to move from front to back.
So it's tethering if it's not moving.
And you might be able to feel like if you do a vaginal exam and someone's got like deep infiltrating endometriosis where all their like pelvic organs are stuck together, you can sometimes feel that in the vagina. You might feel scar tissue, and it can feel like tethering or like a nodule, and that can be a sign, okay, well, that's not normal, that's more likely to be endometriosis, maybe we need to think about getting some tests to look for that.
So there are different things, or sometimes people can have like a massive fibroid uterus, like a massive fibroid womb. And when you're kind of examining, you're like, oh, your womb is up by your tummy button. So it actually feels like you're 20 weeks pregnant and you're not. But, you know, what is this? Is it an ovarian cyst? Is it a fibroid? We definitely need to do something else about
this. You can like learn a lot from a pelvic vaginal examination. So I would go to your GP expecting that to happen.
I feel like in my head I was like, oh, you can only really feel then if there's anything wrong inside the vagina, but obviously not. No, you can feel
both,
like the connections and stuff.
And you can feel nothing and there still be a cause of your pain, but that can help put
a good first step.
And then you might have some
next step.
Some tests. Sorry, I just jumped ahead there. Yeah, so you might have some tests. So I think it's important to say that depending on how that initial assessment goes, depending on what information comes back, your GP might say, okay, why don't we try, if you're happy to, a course of hormone treatments.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's recommended like by the, you know, guidelines that GPs use. If we think it might be related to something like endometriosis, it's recommended to try some hormone treatments first, if you're happy to. Mm-hmm. Or they might recommend having some tests. So it's quite straightforward. Forward things would be booking an ultrasound scan of your pelvis to see if we can see things like adenomyosis or other things. Sometimes you might have an MRI scan, and this wouldn't usually be through your GP. It would most likely be that your GP refers you to gynae, and then the gynecologist thinks there might be an indication for an MRI scan. Mm-hmm. Okay. But that's another thing that might happen.
Yeah. The ultrasound that we usually do as well, expect when you go to have an ultrasound, first of all, on your tummy, but okay. mostly they will do a vaginal ultrasound. Mm-hmm. And that's because we can see everything much, much clearer on a vaginal ultrasound. So if we want to be able to have a look for conditions such as adenomyosis or for like things that make us think that there could be endometriosis, and to properly have a look at your ovaries, then a lot of times a vaginal examination is needed.
So is it closer?
Yeah. It's in the vagina? Basically much closer.
You can see better.
Yeah.
When you're layers to go through.
Well, when you're looking through your tummy, you've got kind of lots of layers to go through. And your womb, as we've said, is literally the size of your fist, and it's down in your pelvis, like down, down, down.
Yeah.
So the only way that we can see it is if you have a window. Mm-hmm. So we need your bladder to be full. So we need you to have drunk lots of water. And actually, lots of people think that they've drunk lots of water, and you're like, we'll agree to disagree. anything in your bladder. But it makes it easy. Have a wee, empty your bladder, then we can do a vaginal examination.
Yeah.
Okay.
There aren't really any blood tests you can have for chronic pelvic pain. It's not something that we can diagnose in a blood test, sadly. If you have an ultrasound scan that shows a big ovarian cyst, you might then have a blood test to look at that, but it wouldn't usually be helpful in diagnosing it. And then sometimes you might have what's called a diagnostic laparoscopy.
Yeah.
Again, this would be if you get referred to the gynecologist. Your GP doesn't do these. And we have a whole episode on what this is, so have a listen to that. It's a nice short episode, and it really does explain what a laparoscopy is. But essentially, it's a diagnostic test which can have treatment with it.
Yeah.
But when we don't know what the cause of your pain is and you have one, we won't know until we look inside your tummy. Mm-hmm. So you have a camera that goes through your belly button into your tummy. It blows your tummy up with gas. We can see quite clearly things like superficial endometriosis or deep infiltrating endometriosis, other things like fibroids or cysts, some adhesions, that kind of thing. So we may be able to diagnose the cause of your pain and treat it if it's mild endometriosis, that kind of thing. Or you might need to come back after we've done that test, based on what we found, to have a discussion about what would be the best treatment for you.
Yeah.
Most common case of that is like if you've had the laparoscopy and actually everything in your pelvis is stuck together with endometriosis and it's also affecting your bowel or your bladder, then it would be a case of coming back and
usually having an MRI.
Having an MRI scan.
Yeah.
Doing a more a planned, careful surgery.
Yeah.
If that's what you want. But there aren't really any good tests. You might have those things as part of the workup, but you might not, and you might still be diagnosed with chronic pelvic pain.
Yeah. Okay, so I feel like we've touched on a few potential treatments, some, you know, hormones, some surgery maybe, but like, should we go through that step by step, see what we may or may not get?
There's not lots of treatments, so it's actually quite...
It's a bit trial and error-ish, isn't it? So if we think it's potentially related to hormones or like an endometriosis or an adenomyosis, then the first line, as Alison said, would be to try a hormone for 3 to 6 months.
Okay.
It's really difficult because you might be, right, I've been to the GP, I've made sure I've advocated for myself, they've given me the pill, you go home and it doesn't get better within a week, 2 weeks, but you really need to give something like that a bit of chance to get into your system. And I think by the GP or the gynecologist or whoever you've seen laying that down first and just kind of saying quite bluntly, you need to give this at least 3 months to see if it will work, rather than kind of snip snap going to different things all the time. You need to stick with something.
I feel like it's even like, say, skincare. It's not going to work overnight.
But I think people find that more acceptable. Like, they go and you're like, your skin will get better, but it's going to take 3 months or whatever. But I think with hormones, people are like, they want them to work, and if they don't, they're like, that one doesn't work for me, it causes bleeding, I'll move on to something else. That one doesn't work because it causes whatever. And I get the first one that you try might not work for you, but just stick with it for a little bit of time.
So this is like pill, coil.
Yeah.
Something else.
Yeah, or anything really. So any of the hormone treatments that can be used for contraception can also work for pelvic pain if it's caused by something like endometriosis or adenomyosis, or actually if you don't know the cause, just by reducing the number of periods that you're having can actually improve the
especially
symptoms
if
you're
symptoms is,
so it might be something straightforward like the progesterone only pill that you take every day, and that should reduce or stop you having periods. It could be the combined pill where you have a break or you don't have to have a break. Again, we've got, if you listen to the episode on contraception, that actually covers most of the treatments that might be offered to you for this as well.
I feel like we're just like slipping the podcast episodes in here and everywhere.
We've got a little repertoire.
Also, the Marina intrauterine system, or coil as it's more widely known as, is quite useful for pelvic pain as well. Mm-hmm. So that's something that you will most likely be offered if you go with pelvic pain. But then it's not just hormones. So obviously there's pain relief. Like paracetamol, ibuprofen, other types of pain relief that can help not cure the cause of your pain, but can help manage the symptoms.
So if you've got heavy painful periods, then you might be offered something like tranexamic acid, which will make the period less heavy.
Okay.
So you would just take that specifically at the time of your period. So it's kind of like putting that in with other things as well,
directly battling the symptoms.
And if
can you have
tranexamic acid?
Can you have that as well as, like, the pill?
Yeah,
you can. So tranexamic acid is not hormonal.
Okay.
It's a medication that helps reduce bleeding. So you can have that for your heavy periods, if that is one of your symptoms, as well as a hormonal treatment that's working for you, if you need it.
And painkillers.
A lot of people who are on hormone treatments don't need tranexamic acid because it tends to be reducing their heavy bleeding.
Yeah.
But tranexamic acid is good for bleeding. It's not good for pain. But you can link it up with something called methenamic acid,
which is
an anti-inflammatory. And that has more of a pain reduction kind of profile, and it can reduce bleeding a bit as well. So those two things together are a really good alternative for people who don't want hormones.
Yeah. See, I feel like I've not heard of them as much.
Yeah. No, they're a really good little duo, aren't they?
Yeah.
They work well.
Yeah.
Then if your symptoms suggest something like irritable bowel syndrome, or if we can see from your pain diary that a lot of your triggers are food, then changing your diet and having a nutritionist advise you, like our lovely Christy Lee that we had on our episode, can improve your symptoms.
You can use antispasmodics as well. You can buy them over the counter, or you can get them from your GP, a little bit of a trial.
Yes.
Yeah,
I hadn't heard of antispasmodic.
So that's what it is.
But these can be really helpful for kind of, as the name says, being antispasmodic. So instead of you having spasms in your bowel, like this would calm the spasms down. People do find that they work for other things as well. So sometimes people can find they work for period pain. They use them.
Kidney stones.
That was my next one.
They basically cause relaxation of smooth muscle, and smooth muscle is all over your body in lots of different places. Yeah. So if your cause of your pain is spasming of smooth muscle, like a stone in your kidney that's causing your ureter to spasm, it can help you.
And then we've said about pain relief, which pain relief can be used in lots of different forms, and then pelvic physiotherapy. So pelvic physiotherapy, there are people that are specialised in this. We're hoping to get a pelvic physiotherapist on actually in the future, and she has been, and all the people that do this have been, like, they focus totally on that on the pelvic floor and how we can train and how we can just be better individuals with a better pelvic floor.
Like the Kegels?
The pelvic floor muscle exercises.
See that person on TikTok that does it? And I'm just
The videos where it's like, it's like, everyone tune in, squeeze now for 3 seconds.
I've seen this.
And relax.
She does it like it's a proper little dance. I'm like,
with fun music.
I mean, you should do, but it's that whole like
never skip a Kegel video.
Well, it's that whole you can't really see it, can you? You know, when you're like, you can see if you've got abs, you can see if your abs are toned, but you can't really see your pelvic floor.
And it's not just pelvic floor exercises, it's like the pelvic floor physios will do an assessment of your pelvis. So they would do a vaginal examination as well, and they'd look at where there might be tension or pain and that kind of thing, and they might have, well, they don't just say, okay, right, we've done all this, do some pelvic floor exercises. They have different exercises and different ways that can help improve your pain as well.
So it's all right me saying to you, do your pelvic floor exercises, but if you're like where is my pelvic floor and how do I do this? Yeah. Well, then there's actually no point. So they do directed pelvic floor exercises. So they will literally be like, squeeze now. Like, and they'll be like, no, that's the wrong bit. No,
like,
that's the wrong bit.
Do it.
Yeah,
because a lot of people do it wrong.
It's not as straightforward as what you might
probably think it is.
Yeah. Sounds like there's a lot of specialities that are involved in that.
Yeah, definitely. It should be, yeah. I mean, chronic pelvic pain syndrome, where we don't know what the cause is, but you still have these severe symptoms, ideally you should go to a specialist clinic where you have lots of different people there, lots of different specialists.
So you see a pain specialist, a lot of times that can be somebody with an anaesthetist background. You see a surgeon to ensure that there's no kind of surgical input that's needed. You see a physio who not only does like pelvic floor stuff, but they also do like pelvic alignment and different things in your pelvis, not from just down below, from your tummy as well. And then you usually see a psychologist as well, which would help you with your, not if we think that you are depressed or anxious or that kind of stuff. So people can get kind of worried that that's what people are assuming is the problem.
Like it's all in
your head. I'm not saying that. Mm-hmm. I'm saying that they would give you coping mechanisms to be like,
guidance.
Yes, you're having a bad day with your pelvic pain. How can we make that a better day?
Yeah.
How can we, like from CBT.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, people who have chronic back pain, as we've talked about, would accept that that can affect their mental health and accept that having pain coping strategies would be helpful for them, because not everyone wants back surgery, and also back surgery isn't actually going to improve most people's back pain. Same thing with chronic pelvic pain. Mm-hmm. It will affect you mentally, and it doesn't mean that that's the cause of your pain or that it's all in your head, but having coping mechanisms that can be learned from psychologists is a way to help manage your symptoms and improve your life.
Yeah, does not sound like
which
a bad
is important.
Thing.
No, yeah, I mean, it's a great thing.
The bad thing about this whole issue is that the access to these clinics is rubbish.
Yeah.
I was going to say, it sounds like a dream.
Yeah.
It sounds like, I feel like I'd feel so loved.
Yeah.
And all those people trying to help.
It is, but if you think how many patients could you see in a clinic like that?
Not very many.
But also, not everyone needs to get to that point.
No,
a lot of people will have chronic pelvic pain. We can find out a couple of causes, we can try some treatments, and your life gets better.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean you're going to have it forever.
Yeah.
But if you are someone that's tried multiple different things and we're, you know, months, years down the line and things are still not any better for you, then a clinic like that can be really helpful.
And there are like management programs as well. So mostly the anaesthetists run and you go on like a 2-week pain management program where it's a lot more intensive.
Like pain management retreat.
Yeah.
I was going to say the ones where when you're doing your driving test and you can do like a 3-week
crash course.
And then you...
Crash course, that's not the right word, surely.
No, I swear that's what we call it.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
Crash course for my driving lessons, yeah.
So this is crash course for CPD.
Obviously, we can't, miss out that people do have surgery as well.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So some people will need surgery for their pain, and it will help their pain and they will be much better. Mm-hmm. A lot of people find that surgery helps for a short time. A lot of people find that surgery makes no difference. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really difficult, especially as surgeons, to know that.
Yeah.
And I think you just got to be really honest with people and make sure that you set expectations properly. Mm. I think that's all the treatment stuff that we wanted to kind of cover.
Okay, should we jump into medicine questions?
Perfect. Yeah, with our new little
love
question cards.
Very on
brand.
If you're
just listening, you're missing out. You need to watch the video so you can see Laura and Laura's question cards.
Oh, you know when they do that, going up to the camera, like
love that.
That is my
meds.
Yes.
Mm. So the first one is the chronic pelvic pain. It's just period pain.
So no, it's not just period pain. It's, as we said right at the beginning, so pain that is in your pelvis that's been there for more than 6 months. It's not specifically just on your period or just when you have sex or related to pregnancy. And it can be, it's a spectrum. It can be experienced in lots of different ways, but it's not just period pain.
Yeah, I think the wellbeing of women are doing loads of stuff on this with regards to it's not just a period. And making sure that people are heard and people are suffering with period pains in inverted commas that are like debilitating, they can't go to work, they're vomiting, that's not a period.
This is the thing, we loved the just when it was, it's just a smear.
Yeah.
But it's not just a period.
No.
I feel like I say just quite a lot actually
Another myth, if scans and tests are normal, nothing's wrong.
No, that's a really common myth. And it's also really hard, I think, for people who've struggled with pain, have a test that they're expecting to give them a cause,
yeah.
and then it comes back as normal or negative. It's not that you then, you're clearly lying, you don't have any pain, there's no cause, so we don't believe yeah. you. You still have pain, that's just part of the process to try and figure out what it is.
And when you say negative, you mean that there was no cause found?
Yeah, so when we're talking about laparoscopy, if you look inside and everything appears normal visually in your pelvis, there's no endometriosis or anything like that, we would come to you and explain that, and we would call it a normal or a negative laparoscopy,
okay.
which seems like good news, but for a lot of people it's suffering with pain, not. Hoping to find out what the cause is, it can be a really difficult thing to process.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's really difficult, and I think it's that whole setting expectations before an operation,
mm-hmm. yeah.
and also speaking to people properly and not just being like, it's not gynecology. Off the list.
Bye-bye. I'm done.
Because what will happen is yeah. that person will still carry on suffering, will go back to the GP, will refer back to gynecology, and will have another laparoscopy.
Yeah.
Because they've not got an answer. And I know we're saying that a lot of times there isn't a visual answer, but an answer is like a discussion, a description,
yeah.
saying, we believe you, we understand yeah. you've got pain, mm-hmm. let's think about what can help you.
And yeah. you've definitely said this in an episode before about having more operations being more risky and
yeah.
causing more damage.
Each operation you have means that the potential complication rate goes up, and the potential to have more adhesions. And mm-hmm. so it's just like a cycle that we kind of want to stop and say, you can have pain, which we will try and do something about that
yeah.
doesn't need to have a label.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Fab. Shock, I'm saying just again. CPP, chronic pelvic pain, is just part of being a woman.
So no, we definitely don't want people to think that. Yeah. It's not just part of being a woman. A lot of women will go through their lives and have no pain, like no major pain when
yeah.
they're having periods or anything else. If you think that you've got chronic pain in your pelvis, that is not just something you should live with. You definitely need to go and keep a pain diary.
Yeah.
See your GP and try and get improvement.
You know your body,
yeah.
so you know if something's wrong, and if you think something's wrong, you should go see someone.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Another one. Whoa, this is interesting.
This was a fun find.
Wearing a crystal around your belly at night on a full moon cures chronic pelvic pain.
So true.
Now this one is
I forgot to mention that in the treatment section. Sorry, we should have said that first. No, but I love that someone thinks that that could be true.
Yeah,
it's not going to cause any harm.
I mean, has
it
been an RCT?
yeah, but
has
no,
there been an
not.
RCT to say that it doesn't work?
No.
Yeah.
If you find
pretty.
That it improves it, then give it a go. But
it makes you feel better.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a fun TikTok friend, I can't lie. And then our last myth is that severe pain means a serious, bad condition, and mild pain means it's nothing.
No. And I think this goes back to some people will have stage 4 endometriosis with a frozen pelvis and will be going about their life and not know about this.
Mm-hmm.
Some people have superficial endometriosis and find this very debilitating.
Mm-hmm.
Pain doesn't correlate to what we see visually, and pain can be related to nothing visually.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's we need to treat what we can
mm-hmm.
To ensure that you are living your best life.
Yeah,
definitely.
That's why the focus on chronic pelvic pain should be management of the pain, not
yeah. mm-hmm.
well, okay, it might be because of that tiny spot of endometriosis, I've removed it, see you later, everything should get
but
better.
But then also I'm just like, so we've removed all your endometriosis, you had 2 spots, and then 6 months later you're
still
like, well, I've still got pain.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So then you kind of back to the point of, but they've told me they've removed my endometriosis, so what is this
on? Yeah,
it's really difficult. I just think focusing on the symptoms and the symptoms that are worrying you,
mm-hmm.
the symptoms that are causing you not to be able to do the things you want to do,
yeah,
that's what we should be focusing on.
And some questions.
Mm-hmm.
So would a pregnancy help with chronic pelvic pain like it does with other conditions?
So I have a problem with this.
Okay.
So my problem with this is that people say about, oh, if you've got endometriosis, just get pregnant.
Yeah.
And then the endometriosis, this is the problem. The endometriosis will feel better while you're pregnant and potentially for a time after. And I'm like, so for some people, that could be true. But how awful is that for the person that's been trying to get pregnant
yeah.
for the last 5 years?
Mm-hmm.
Or how awful is that for the person that's single and
mm-hmm.
really wants a pregnancy,
yeah.
but they're not in a relationship?
It's also just a quick fix. Like that is something that we see sometimes. You know,
yeah.
if you happen to be in a stage of your life where you want to get pregnant and you're lucky enough to get pregnant, your pain might improve, but that's not a treatment.
Yeah.
That's not something that a medical professional could recommend to you.
You can't just continue having babies for the rest of your life.
No.
I mean, you could.
Well, you could, but it's not for everyone. So yeah, no, that's not a helpful thing.
No, I just think it's unhelpful for a lot of people. Mm. And I think it's weird that we find it, not we, but I'm saying the general population find it okay to say that.
Yeah. I agree.
No, defo. This one's a nicer question, I'd say. Someone asked what they can do to support their loved one who has chronic pelvic pain but doesn't have that sort of, like, reason for it.
So we'll put a link at the bottom of the page. There's a few different, like, websites and resources that are specifically for that. So, you know, people who have got chronic pelvic pain syndrome, we don't know what the underlying cause is, but different ways that you can be supported by your partner, that you can help yourself, advocate for yourself, and, like, self-management things. It's really difficult, but there are things that exist to help you, even though you don't know exactly what the cause is.
And I think it's that making sure that they feel listened to, making sure that you, if they're having a bad day, you think about what would make it better for them.
Not using the word just.
I think being understanding as well, you know, having no
just expectation. Put it into that hole of what would you do if you had back pain?
No, that's a good
Genuinely, I think we can all go back to that kind of. What
we've
would
all
I think if
pain.
They've got back pain?
Which we shouldn't have to.
Yeah.
Though do.
But
is chronic pelvic pain linked to toxic shock from tampons?
So it could be. So one of the causes of chronic pelvic pain is infection. And if you've had infection in your pelvis, then that can cause pain. But toxic shock syndrome is really, first of all, very rare. And it would not be a common cause of chronic pelvic pain. But it could do.
It's very rare, but I think as a teenage girl, it was probably one of the scariest things in the world imagining. I feel like it was like, right, if I wear a tampon for 10 minutes longer, I'm going to die.
It's so weird, isn't it? The things that you're taught are don't wear tampons longer than they tell you and don't get pregnant.
Yeah.
Like, literally, they're the things that are like the worst things in life. I'm not being funny, but I've seen people that have had tampons in for a long, long time and they didn't get toxic shock syndrome. And I'm not saying that that's a good thing, but I'm saying, like, I promise, like,
Well, not everyone would get it because it's a specific type of bacteria that has to be in your tampon or your vagina for you to be at risk of it anyway, and not everyone even has that.
I feel like as a teenager I can remember, like, coming out in a panic and being like, oh my god, I forgot.
Same. I think everyone must go through that because it is something that's so, like, widely talked about. But yes.
Okay, the next one I think we've touched on a bit. So it was asking if Kegels help with CPP.
So I suppose it depends what the cause of the chronic pelvic pain is. And we've discussed briefly what Kegels are and thinking about your pelvic floor. And I think that goes back to the whole, you need to make sure that you're doing your pelvic floor exercises properly. potentially.
Maybe if you're doing them right.
Yeah.
Is chronic pelvic pain more common in older/younger people? Is there anyone that it affects more?
So it's difficult. I think the reproductive lifespan, so we would say kind of 18 to say 45, 50, is usually the higher rate of when people will have chronic pelvic pain. But we see young people that then grow out of it, and we see older people that have continued to have endometriosis pain through and after the menopause, or have pain related to other things, muscular pains, bony problems. So it's difficult to put a finger on it. And some people, I think if you've got chronic pelvic pain, it doesn't mean that you've got it for forever, because you might have something that works really well for you, or you might find that you just don't have it anymore. And I think it's that kind of, come on, this potentially is just going to be a little bit of your life.
Interesting when we said about the, does pregnancy help?
Yeah.
Does menopause help?
So, yes, with some things. Usually with conditions like endometriosis and adenomyosis and fibroids sometimes, menopause can help because you haven't got the estrogen anymore. But some people will still have bad pain from endometriosis that they've had for a long time, with the nerves that have been damaged, and also with kind of being on HRT can affect it. So it doesn't mean, oh, just wait, and at 51, when you go through menopause, at 51, because everyone goes through it at 51, you'll be totally fine. That doesn't work for everybody. It does help for a lot of people, doesn't work for everyone.
Okay.
It's that thing that, you know, just because the stimulus or the trigger or the injury is gone, doesn't mean that their symptoms go away always with chronic pelvic pain. So it could be something that you still experience beyond the menopause.
Yeah.
Okay. This one kind of links back to that pregnancy one a little bit, I guess. Someone was asking if they would be more likely to have or get chronic pelvic pain if they've had a child. And I guess we've sort of touched on that.
I mean, it's a small risk factor. Yeah. So, you know, if you've had a C-section, then that has a small risk of having chronic pelvic pain afterwards.
And you can have a perineal injury. So, as we said, the area around where your vagina is, there might be damage there as well.
Well, the pelvic floor gets damaged just by being pregnant, not even necessarily from delivery. So, yes, but loads of people have pregnancies and have no chronic pelvic pain symptoms. So,
And if my mum has chronic pelvic pain, will I get it one day too?
I don't think there's been a link. Like, there has been a link with certain conditions, like endometriosis, adenomyosis, but not with chronic pelvic pain as such.
Yeah, that comes back to, you know, that's a symptom. Chronic pelvic pain is a symptom, not a diagnosis.
Yeah.
So if the cause of your symptom is something like endometriosis, maybe, but otherwise, probably not.
Yeah.
Okay.
Fab. I think that was a roundup of a chronic pelvic pain.
Yeah, that was a good one. It's a hard, because it comes into so many of our different topics. It's actually, it's nice to be like, oh, you can listen to this episode. But yeah, thank you for listening. So quick disclaimer, everything we've shared are our own opinions and are not affiliated with where we work. And anything we've said shouldn't be taken as personalised medical advice.
Yeah, and if you've enjoyed this episode, if you've learned something new, learned about what we do every day, then leave us a review and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
It may seem like a little thing, but giving us a 5-star review pushes the podcast out to as many people as possible. And we really want to break the barriers down, bust myths, and give out really good information.
And we want this episode and this podcast to reach as many people as possible. So if you want to be part of that ripple effect, then please hit the like button.
And make sure you're engaging with all of our content on social medias and following us on all of our platforms at Between Two Ovaries.
Thank you.
Bye.